Just wait a few more seconds for people to come in, to stagger in. Their limbs are frozen, so it takes a while for them to warm up. I remember when I was young, my father had one of these old cars. And when it was a really cold morning in London, he had to put the crankshaft in and crank it up and down and up and down, the old vehicles. I really felt sorry for him. All I could do to help him was say, "Faster, Dad, faster." So sometimes old bodies are like that too. It takes a while for them to crank up and get out of bed. Especially because many of you, or half of you, came in very late last night. So today will be a nice, easy day. So the talk would only last for about 3 hours. No, I'm too compassionate for that. So again, welcome to Jhana Grove Meditation Retreat Center. And some of you, hopefully, some of you being here for the first time, hopefully would appreciate that it's very comfortable for you. You have your nice rooms, each with its own ensuite, nice and clean. And to reassure you, we had these professional cleaners came in just a couple of weeks ago. Cost a fortune, but they got all the bugs out of the bed, all of the stuff out of everywhere else. So it's been specially cleaned, especially for our guests from Hong Kong and Indonesia. So it's very nice for you all. And there are heaters in your room. You know what those heaters are for? For turning on, not just for looking at. So if you are cold, please use the heaters, so that at least you can be in good health while you stay here. So, and we have also chairs in the back. You know what the chairs are for? Sitting on. So if it's too hard to sit on the floor, please use the chairs. You can get enlightened on the chairs just as well as getting enlightened on the floor. And especially some of you, you know, have lived very nice lifestyles. You may not have been used to sitting on the floor, grown up on chairs. Some of you may have even been born on a chair, I don't know. But anyway, these days we're used to sitting on chairs much more than sitting on the floor. Although, you know, there's still quite a few people in Asia and China who sit on the floor. And I often thought of starting a cut price airline with no seats. Everyone just squats on the floor. And that way, in an ordinary aircraft, you can get two levels. You know, because you only have to have this much to the ceiling. And that way you can get twice as many people on the aircraft if they sit on the floor. Is that a good idea? A new business model. And if they meditate, you know, of course you don't need any sort of food or anything, because you're meditating, you feel so happy, so peaceful, so you don't need any in-flight entertainment or any food or drinks. You just sit there at the beginning of the flight, enter jhana, and 12 hours later when you get back to Hong Kong, or 5, 6 hours, whatever it is to get to, and then you come out of jhana and then you've arrived. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Anyway, that's a long way away. So anyway, welcome here. You've had long flights, so today's going to be a nice, easy day. So just welcome here. Please make use of the facilities here. We're supposed to keep noble silence, but that's impossible. We have tried it before. So try and keep only speech if it's really, really, really important. And so we usually say that there's the three reflections you should do before opening your mouth to speak to someone. And the first reflection before opening your mouth is this really important? And ask that question. And if you consider and think, yeah, it really is important, then you can tick the first box. And the second question you ask yourself, is this really, really important? And if it is really, really important, then you can tick the second box and go on to question number three, which is this really, really, really important? And if it is really, really, really important, then you can speak. And by that time, the person has probably left anyway, so you can still keep quiet, which makes it very easy. So don't just speak just for the sake of having a conversation. Just, you know, try and keep quiet. And because today, or this retreat, is a special retreat, we have a lot of my disciples from Indonesia and a lot from Hong Kong. So we're going to have a competition. Who? Who can speak the less? And I will announce the results at the end of the retreat. Who is the noisiest? The Indonesians or the Hong Kongies? We'll soon see. It's probably the locals who are just coming in from Bodhinyana Monastery. They probably speak more than the others. So try and keep quiet. The first day, obviously, you need to talk, to say hello, to make sure you have everything, to know where the lunch is and everything else. But just after a while, see if you don't need to have conversations and talk about stuff. You can leave that till later on. We talk throughout our whole life, and now is the chance to have silence. And it's such a wonderful thing. You see someone, you can smile, and then you can pass by just to say that, you know, we care for you, you know, we acknowledge you, you know, you're not alone, you have a friend here. But we can have this in silence. And you will find that in silence, when you're not talking to each other, you can be much more aware of everything which is happening in this beautiful setting here. Now, sometimes I've looked at this retreat center, you know, on sort of, you look at it on Google Maps or something, you see this is a little island surrounded by forest. And if you walk around just this central area, you can see just trees everywhere, all around you. And it's a long way. The nearest civilization is our monastery down the road, and that's a quiet place. So you'll find this is one of the most silent places you can ever go in the world. There's hardly any noise. There's no aircraft passing overhead. The traffic is hardly anything along Kingsbury Drive. And there's no noise of shops or radios and music. It's a very silent place. But what you will hear here is the sound of the birds, or the sound of the wind, or if you're lucky, if it rains. And those are sounds of nature. And once you start to open up your mind to the sounds of nature, you'll find that stops all this thinking business. Because the sounds of nature are very delightful, they're pacifying, they're calming, and they're incredibly beautiful. And after a while, you prefer to listen to the sound of the birds and the sound of the thing inside, which is always talking to you. So in order to calm the mind down, please enjoy the quiet nature, natural sounds of this little island, this sanctuary of peace in the forests of Western Australia. And of course, being up on a hill here, we do have beautiful views as well. You can see the great sunsets, either, you know, having a cup of tea in the kitchen or other dining room, sitting outside and watch the sun go down. It's a very beautiful. You can just see the ocean in the distance, and beautiful sunsets this time of year. And even better at night time. You know, the stars which you see here in Western Australia are amazing. Even I've lived here over 30 years now. I came back from giving a talk at our city centre last night, and just on the way from the car back to my hut, just to seeing incredible beautiful stars at night. So those are parts of nature which is like the free gift of coming to Jayanagar. It's a very beautiful place because there's no pollution at all. And there's a long way from the nearest factory, and there's not much cars around. So this is very beautiful, clean air, very healthy. You can see the stars, you can see the sunsets, you hear the sound of the birds. And if you're lucky, you may be able to see what I've told you many times, Buddhist kangaroos. I've told you the difference between a Christian kangaroo and a Buddhist kangaroo before. You know, the Christians put their paws like this and the Buddhists do this. So see if you can find a Buddhist kangaroo when you're around. They're usually very, very friendly because they've got used to the monks and the birds as well. So they don't usually run away. If they do, they only run away a little distance. And also while you're here, of course, you are welcome to go and visit Bodhinyana Monastery. Just a very short distance, a 15-minute walk. You go out the main gate where you came in last night or this morning, whenever it was. And just you turn right and go down the road for about 10 minutes. You can see the monastery on the left. And I really invite you that during this time, if you want to
You know, meditation in here is not so good. Try the meditation hall in Bodhinyana Monastery. It's got very, very powerful energy. Even it was about last year when I was away somewhere that somebody brought a Feng Shui master to visit our monastery. I wasn't here, so they just took him into the main hall, and straight away he said, wow. Especially the front of that hall, that's got incredibly powerful Feng Shui. Really good energy. So if you can't meditate here, try over there, and you get a big boost of energy. 30 years we've been meditating in that place, and so it's built up a huge amount of energy. Even this hall has built up some energy as well now, not as much as in Bodhinyana. So you can always have a walk over there, a quiet walk, and just go and try meditating in the hall at Bodhinyana Monastery. And you don't always, when you do meditation, you don't always have to meditate in this place. Sometimes I encourage people to meditate in their rooms. You've got these beautiful rooms, they're quiet, the toilet's right next door, and there's a bed there in case you have sloth and torpor. And some people prefer meditating in their rooms rather than in here, because sometimes when you're in here, there's people come in and go out, come in and go out, and it can be noisy. Because as you will find out in the retreats which I run here, we don't have much of a schedule. And I do that on purpose. This is not the army, this is not school, this is not Guantanamo Bay. This is a beautiful retreat center where you can meditate at your own pace. There are some people who have been meditating for years, who are very skilled at meditating. They want to meditate hour, 2 hours, 3 hours sometimes. There's other people, 5-10 minutes is a bit of a struggle. So because of that, we don't have these times when you have to be here at a certain time, and you have to sit even though it's killing you, and you have to get up even though you're just about to get enlightened. I always tell people, imagine, you know, if the Buddha sitting under the Bodhi tree, you know, had to keep a schedule, you know, and he was just about to get into the first jhana and somebody rang the bell, gong, and that would actually take him out. He would not become a Buddha. So I know that happened to me many times when I was going on to these retreats. Sometimes you're getting really peaceful, really still. See the beautiful lights and energies coming up in the mind, and you're just about to get enlightened, gong, and you had to get out. And there are other times when you're sitting there for the hour's meditation, and it was almost an hour, at least you thought it was, and you looked up at the clock and it was only 10 minutes had gone past, and you couldn't wait. You know what I actually thought of doing is, did any of you have those little pea shooters when you were young? Little tubes, and you put like a little pea in and you shot it at things. I really thought as a young monk getting one of those and aiming it at the bell so it would go when I wanted it to, so we could all leave when I wanted it because it was hurting. So having been through that, I don't really want people to suffer that much and have to force yourself to meditate for 45 minutes or an hour just because that's on the schedule. You usually find people do far more meditation, they're far more successful when we keep it free and easy. In the morning you can get up, you can meditate in your room if you wish to, or you can come in here and meditate. We do have some chanting, that's usually, what time is that, at 6 o'clock I think? And you know, you can come in there for that if you want to. If you don't like to do that, you can do your own chanting in your own room. The sleep chanting. And that means when it gets to about sort of, what time is the breakfast now? 6:45 is your breakfast. You don't have to set your alarm for that. I guarantee that you will know when it's breakfast time. And then we have this little talk at 8 o'clock, and then the rest of the day is very much free for you. So, you know, especially this first day. Again, many of you have come from a long distance, and you are tired, you came in late last night. So please catch up on your sleep today. After this talk, you can go to bed if you wish, or just wait till lunch, and then after lunch have a nice rest. Catch up. Because one of the biggest obstacles to meditation, again, if you force the mind, you have to fight sloth and torpor. And much of the sloth and torpor is just because of sleepiness. I gave a talk last night over in Anolamara Center, and talking about Buddhism and teenagers. And I mentioned that In one talk which I gave over in Kuala Lumpur 4 or 5 years ago, it was at a seminar of 15 to 25 year olds, you know, the young Buddhists. And in that seminar, we asked, you know, people to write down, you know, what is the most difficult emotional challenge you face in your life. And I was surprised, but afterwards I realized, wow, yes, this is very powerful what they've just said. The emotion which was the most pressing and difficult for them to face in their life in Kuala Lumpur for young people was tiredness. And when I heard that, you know, I thought, wow, now that's the main problem of young people in today's world. They have to do so much, even the 15 to 25. There's so many challenges they face. There's so many much peer pressure, school pressure, life pressures on them, even at that young age, and they work so hard. And don't think just being out with their friends they're wasting time. That's pressure on them too. You know, for a girl to be popular, for the boy to be tough, whatever they want to do in their life. And it's very tough for them. So they were very tired. And that's probably the biggest emotional problem for many of you as well. Tired. Struggling, working so hard, rushing around, going shopping. There are no shops within 30 kilometers of this place. You are stuffed. There's no shopping you can possibly ever do. So yeah, it's a bit fun sometimes, but here you can't do that. You're free of that. So it means you can actually rest. And if there's nothing else you get out of these days you're spending in this retreat center, except just to rest your poor body and mind, that is a wonderful thing which you have achieved. People are tired, and because of tiredness they get many emotional problems. You know, getting angry, getting grumpy, getting depressed, mostly from tiredness. And even many of the physical sicknesses which come from such tiredness. Your body gets worn out. You get colds and flus and even cancers and stuff because of tiredness. So please, rest while you're here. You get very comfortable beds, beautiful rooms. So please make use of them. If that's all you ever do in this retreat is just to sleep, well done. And I mean that. So the classic story I tell on every retreat of this woman who came here from Sydney. Oh no, it's actually another retreat. Another retreat I gave, she came from Sydney. And when I gave the instructions like this, she slept almost continually for 3 days. She was an executive. She had so many problems and decisions to make, and so she said she got up just before breakfast every day. After breakfast she had a nap until lunch. She got up for lunch, and after lunch she went to bed again. And I really praised that girl. You know, a couple of hours, and then in the afternoon she got up, had a walk, shower, just, you know, did some meditation. So for the first 2 or 3 days she did hardly any meditation at all, just a little bit in the afternoon. But she really needed to catch up. And after 2 or 3 days, she felt so good, so relaxed, so rested, so healthy, that then she began doing some more meditation, getting up early. And soon, her meditation was so good that by the end of the retreat, she was the star meditator. Now, she got some great states of meditation. I always praise that girl because she knew the state of her body. It was tired, it needed some rest. And she was smart enough to actually to be a real good Buddhist and practice mindfulness and compassion, what I call the kindfulness. To be aware of her body, to know what it needed, and to be kind enough to her body. The body said, I need a sleep, and she gave it a sleep. And later on, she was mindful enough in the morning when she got up, 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the morning, her body didn't need any sleep, it was rested. So I was very happy to meditate. It had no force, no stress was required. It was a natural way of meditating, which is always the very best. So don't push yourself on this retreat. Work with your body, work with your mind, not against it. And then you'll find you get the better results. And also, when you go home, you'll say, wow, these meditation retreats, you know, they're so wonderful. You can relax and rest, you feel good afterwards, the mind gets into deep, peaceful meditation states, And you think, this is such an incredible, wonderful place to come. Which means more people meditate. Whenever I've gone around the world, a lot of people are terrified of going on a meditation retreat. They really think that you've got to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and if you're late, a monk is sent there to drag you out of bed and humiliate you in front of everybody. And you've got to sit until late at night, even though your back is hurting and your legs are exploding in pain. And they think that that's a meditation retreat. That's not a meditation retreat. That is what they do in Guantanamo Bay. And you're not terrorists. You haven't deserved to experience things like that. So the meditation retreat is very compassionate and kind and peaceful. When that attitude is established within you, you find it's very easy then to meditate, to make the mind peaceful and calm. Number one, how do you get your body to be relaxed, to be peaceful and calm? Rest it, give it good food, keep it nice and warm. If you feel like the temperature's getting better, we put the heater on in this room. And, you know, soon this room will be nice and cozy for you. Which means it's nice for you to come and meditate here. You don't need the blanket so much anymore because it's nice and comfortable. This is what we're supposed to have here, a comfortable place to meditate. And so that when it becomes comfortable, you can see that when you care for your body and you care for your mind, it's easy for the body to relax and disappear. You can sit comfortably. And there's no aches and pains. You're not fighting the body. You're working with the body. And once the body is nice and comfortable, of course, then you can meditate a long time in order to get your mind comfortable and peaceful and calm. In the same way you relax the body, that is the same way you meditate. With kindness. I was emphasizing the last few days, you know, to monks and also to lay people, there's always some aspect of Buddhism or meditation which is in the front of your mind, you keep saying it again and again. Which was about, you know, learning how to do something as simple as being in the present moment, letting go of the past and future, by being kind to the past and future. Just like, you know, sometimes you may have an ache or an itch or, you know, maybe a cough or a sneeze or something. I know a lot of people, they try and control that. They don't want to sneeze, they don't want to cough, they don't want to have scratch their itch. And what happens? The itch gets worse. So usually we're kind to our body and then the body settles down. We're kind to our mind and that settles down. There are sometimes in the body you have an ache or a pain, scratching won't get rid of it. And I've learned enough now about my own body and meditation. You can take, say, an ache in the knee, focus all of your attention on there and just be so kind to it, not even with touching it, and just relax the whole thing. You can imagine just anything which is a tight knot of pain expanding. You can imagine it expanding and getting less dense, less intense, softer, just like imagine an ice cube being very hard and then melting into water and the water evaporating into a cloud and the cloud dispersing until you can't see any of the water anymore. It's expanded throughout the whole universe. And that's what I do with any aches or pains in the body. I look at it with mindfulness and I imagine expanding, expanding, expanding. And it doesn't get sort of bigger, it gets less as it's not so dense anymore. And the pain sort of vanishes. I'm kind to it. I've noticed that pain, stress is in the body where you feel your body is being pulled tight. Just be kind to it, let it be. And you find all the aches and the pains tend to vanish. Simply with compassion. Seeing how that works in the body, I translate that into the mind. So if I've got something bothering me from the past, you know, I woke up this morning and I remembered a talk I gave last night and I was telling, you know, a few jokes. I wondered if I went a bit far because sometimes that happens in my jokes. Because I was telling people that, I was talking about another monk over in England. You know, sometimes the way you associate, he was telling a story about looking after teenagers. He was the one who was actually saying that if you have a child, and you're a Buddhist, now should you train your child to be a Buddhist, always take him to the temples, Or should you let your son be exposed to all the religions so he can make up his own mind, or no religions? Or how can you bring up a child, you know, as a modern Buddhist? Now, should you indoctrinate your child into your type of Buddhism? And he gave this wonderful advice. He said, no, you don't have to bring up your child as a Buddhist or an everything or a nothing. Just make sure you teach your child two things. Always to be honest. So they will never stop at anything which is not true, which doesn't sound good to them, which doesn't feel good to them. That inner honesty and integrity will be the test, so they don't get involved in stupid cults which, you know, an honest person would never believe in. And number two, teach them how to question. Encourage questioning. Even though it's always very tiring to have question after question after question. I know that because I'm a Buddhist monk. I have question after question after question. But I'd rather have that, have being open to being questioned, than to have people actually believing without questioning at all. Because that way you can find the faith, the truth, which actually suits you, which can withstand any amount of questioning, and you won't stop until you get an honest answer. So if you bring up your child like that, you're actually bringing them up in the best possible way. If Buddhism is the truth, then they will find that. So you don't have to force it on them, just encouraging their questioning and also their honesty. And when I started that, I said, oh, that monk, he was a monk called Ajahn Amaro, and I started telling him about who that monk was, and I told him that recently, you know, I heard that his sister had recently retired. Because, you know, we're all getting that age now. Monks can't retire. I'm trying to sort of get a way of retiring, but you guys won't let me. But his sister retired. And he always thought, this is a monk, he always thought his sister was doing a job, you know, in some secretary in some government department in London. It was only when she retired that he could actually tell him. She was working for MI5. So the monk didn't know his sister was a secret agent. And I was telling people, well, you know, whenever I go travelling all over the world, you know, I spend a lot of my time alone, even when I'm in Hong Kong or in Indonesia. You know, people here don't know what I'm doing. And I say, I'm MI5. This is just my cover, being a Buddhist monk. And what a wonderful cover that is, to be a Buddhist monk. No one would suspect that you were MI5. And you know, I went to Cambridge. That's where they recruit most of the people from MI5, from Cambridge. So I said, I am MI5 agent. Not, a monk is only my cover. And I get to meet all these people, like the presidents of countries and stuff, to get all this. And I said, I'm only joking. I'm not really MI5. But I said, if I was MI5, I'd say that anyway. That I was only joking. I'm not MI5 anyway. Anyway, I was saying that story last night. But sometimes, you know, you make these associations. But the main point was actually how to bring up your kids and always actually to question. And never actually just to believe just because you're told. So when you actually hear, just in order to calm your mind down, whatever it is of the past, because I was worrying whether I went too far last night, you know, telling the people on the internet that this guy's sister was MI5. Anyway, he's already out there. But what happens is you start thinking of the past like that, and it can obsess you. And these silly, stupid things, small things, can obsess you for a long time, sometimes years and years and years. So what do you do about it? You are kind to the past. Give it the benefit of the doubt. No, just don't worry about it. You make mistakes, I make mistakes, we all make mistakes. But don't obsess about the past. To be able to let go of the past, first, like aches and pains in the body, you have to soften them with kindness. So if you have anything in the past which obsesses you in the meditation, don't just try and get rid of it. I'm going to let go of the past. I'm going to be in the present moment, because that past will keep coming up into your mind. Instead, look at that past. Let it be. And just be so compassionate and kind to it. Start thinking of, you know, not the terrible things which might have happened, but the beautiful things which might have happened, you know, because of what you said or what you did. And you know, that, a lot of times that's true. You know, in that latest book, Good, Bad, Who Knows, One of the stories I told him there was something which I felt guilty about for years. When I was a poor student, because even though I had a scholarship, my mother was supposed to pay some money, but no way would I take any money from her because she was really poor. So in the holidays, I'd always get jobs all over the place. And one day I got this job selling children's encyclopedias door to door. You know, the encyclopedia salesman, the worst job in the world. My problem was, I was good at it. I sold an encyclopedia. I sold one. First day. And that night, I felt so guilty. I felt this poor couple. You're selling these children's encyclopedias, and you were preying on couples who've just had kids. And, you managed to convince them that they were just a little bit less than paedophiles and child molesters. If they didn't buy these books, they were just... hurting their children, denying them a chance in life, stopping their education because these books were really essential. And I was so good at that, I sold one, and afterwards I felt terrible. I sold a stupid encyclopedia to some parents who were really poor, and they bought it. And I thought, they're going to have to do without dinner, they're going to have to do without so much stuff to afford this stupid encyclopedia which I sold them. And I felt so guilty, I resigned the next day and got another job. And for years and years and years I felt guilty about that. Every time I thought that was really bad karma I'd done, being a bad salesman. But then, one evening, over in Anolamara Center, I told that story about guilt. And this girl came up and she said, I had to come and tell you this because, these are just coincidences maybe, but I remember when I was a small girl, this student came to the door of our house, long hair and a beard, and sold my parents his encyclopedia. I loved those books. They were my favorite books that were by my bedside. I would always read them. And I loved them. He said, I don't know if it was you, but the coincidence was so strange. And there all my guilt vanished in just one moment. I thought I'd given these people this terrible encyclopedia. And there we had a girl who just loved it. It was the best favorite book of all for her. And so sometimes you look at your past and what you did and you think, oh, what a terrible thing I did. Remember that story. It could have worked out so wonderful. So you can be compassionate to your past. Give it the benefit of the doubt. Look at it in another way. It may have been the best thing which ever happened to somebody, like me selling encyclopedias. When I soften the past that way, then it's easier to let go of. And it's to do the same with the future. Any future fears, worries, anxieties you have, soften it with compassion. Yeah, when you go back to work, is your business going to be okay? Are your stocks going to be okay? Is your soccer team going to be okay? But give it compassion and kindness. Well, if it is okay, it's fine. If it's not okay, it's fine. Stocks go up, stocks go down. If I'm poor, when I go back and all my money is gone, I've lost everything. That's wonderful. Now you can actually live a more simple life with no more worries. If the many girls that don't come here, if you find that while you're away, your husband has run off with your best friend, and wonderful, now I'm free of my husband. Oh, that's so great. So, when you look in the future with a positive mind, then it's much easier not to worry about it. It's like that compassion towards the future softens it so much. It's easy to let go of. Just like, I don't know if any of you coming here, you're afraid of what might happen. 5 days of meditation, 6 days, how am I going to handle this? How am I going to be handled not speaking? I'm not going to be able to do this. Apparently on one of the last retreats we had over here, Ajahn Brahmada was teaching a sutta retreat, and he told these people you have to be really, really quiet. So one guy was so terrified, he would go in his car in the car park every day to speak to himself. That just terrifies, stupid. People saw him, they told us about him. He said, but don't be afraid of the future. You'll be able to handle it. You don't know what it's going to be like. So don't be afraid and worry and think about, oh, I'm going to last another few days. It's so cold in here. I'm going to last not eating in the evenings. I'm going to last not doing this, not doing that. So don't worry about the future. Be kind to it. When you're kind and compassionate towards the future, you see it in a good way. It's not such a big problem. The problem gets softened. The tension gets released. And you find you can let go of the future. And you can actually be here for a change. No worries at all. When it gets to breakfast or lunch, it's all arranged for you. You don't have to worry about what am I going to eat today. And what should I buy to eat today. It's all there for you. You don't have to worry about entertainment. I supply that with my pleasure. You don't have to worry about anything here. You don't have to worry about clothes and fashion. Look at me, do I worry about fashion? Just wear whatever you like when you're here. So isn't it wonderful you don't have to impress anybody? You're totally free, totally at peace. So you don't have to worry about the future. And when you can just do that much, let go of all past and all future without any worries at all. And don't worry about your health either. If you get sick, if you die here, that's really good karma. You know, this is a portal to the high heavenly realms. You just go straight up. You don't have to worry about all this other stuff. So don't, if you really get sick, say, yes, I'm sick. Yes, I'm dying. Dying in the temple. Woohoo! So lucky. So don't be afraid at all. So fear of the future. And you don't have to be worried about wild animals over here. There's no wild animals over here. And the kangaroos are the wildest animal you could ever meet. And they're so soft and just so cuddly. They just eat grass all day. They're vegetarians. Actually, they're not here because we feed them anything and they just eat whatever. You know, it's actually, please don't feed the kangaroos. But you know, sometimes people do. And it's really funny to see those kangaroos. I remember once we had so much spaghetti someone left for us and the Anagarikas put spaghetti out for the kangaroos. Remember the first time you ate spaghetti, you don't know how to actually get it all in your mouth. And this, I always can never forget this picture of this kangaroo looking at me, had this narrow mouth and spaghetti on either side. So, now how do I eat this stuff? They loved it. Couldn't eat it. So sometimes they eat whatever's given to them. And they really love it over here. They get sort of all sorts of ways. The one food that they really, really like, I've seen this, I think it's the same, is pizza. If they see pizza, because they like bread stuff, and you know, with a bit of sort of tomato sauce, whatever it's on top of it, whatever else, they love that pizza. And that's actually where I got the Buddhist kangaroo from, because you know, when they're actually having the pizza, they've learned how to eat it. They get it into their two claws, and they put it in their mouth. And they say, oh, they're Buddhist kangaroos now. As they're eating the pizza. They're really cute. So they don't have to worry about any animals over here. There are snakes here, but no snake comes out this time of the year. They're all sleeping. So, you know, and it's very, very rare to see any of those stuff. So it's a really safe environment over here. And there's no sort of bad guys over here. You know, there's only monks. And don't have to worry about ghosts. I know that you guys, Handu and all this other stuff, you don't have to worry about those stuff. Because ghosts are scared of me. So when they hear Ajahn Brahm's around, I mean they just run away. They may come back later when you guys have left, but no, they can't get into this place. So there are no ghosts over here. And be careful sometimes, because sometimes the kangaroos at night, just the way that they walk, sometimes it's true. Many people have been afraid, and they said it was a ghost. They heard it just walking outside their room. It's just a kangaroo, you know, just the way they walk. Sometimes people can imagine that's somebody walking outside of your room. So there are no ghosts over here, so you have nothing to be afraid of, which means you can really enjoy this place. Safe, secure, peaceful, to really relax, come into this present moment and be here. Whether you're from Indonesia or from Hong Kong, it's just such a busy life we live in these days. So to be able just to relax and be at peace is a wonderful thing, just that much. And that's all I'm asking you. For the first day or two, just come into the present moment. Just be here. Enjoy the place, enjoy the food, enjoy each other's company. Enjoy the nice rooms to relax and rest. And later on in the retreat, you'll find the meditation will come quite naturally. It's amazing actually to see, you don't force the mind, you just let it rest. And it starts relaxing and becoming peaceful all by itself. The standard old stories, Ajahn Chah waving his hand. I don't know how many times I did this in Sri Lanka last week when I was over there. They thought I was saying goodbye. Waving the hand, this is the leaf on a tree. The only reason it moves is because the wind is blowing. Once the wind stops, the leaf moves less and less until it becomes perfectly still. Because that's the nature of a leaf, to be still. That's your mind's, its nature is to be still. You just got to get out of the way and let it relax. That's all you need to do to meditate, to get out of the way and let your mind become still. Which it does very, very naturally. So you will find the next few days, you'll be come and meditate here, sitting down, doing nothing, just relaxing, just being here in this moment. And you'll find your mind gets so peaceful. And then if it really gets peaceful, you'll notice, I never did that. I never forced the mind, it just did it by itself. And then you learn the secret of meditation. Meditation is not something you do. It's something which happens when you stop doing things. When you relax, when you're at peace, when you let go of control. You're relaxing. All your whole life you've had to do things, struggle to achieve, struggle to get places, to get to work on time, to produce the goods at work, to be a successful person. And that's been such a struggle all your life. That's what's made you tired. And now in this retreat, you're perfectly free just to be. Just to let your body and mind relax. And find that when your body relaxes, it becomes really healthy and at ease. When your mind relaxes, it becomes very still and peaceful. It's in this moment. It's not trying to get somewhere. Trying to get somewhere is always going off into the future sometimes. Here you're not trying to get anywhere, you're trying to be here. Be in this moment, with this body, with this mind, just be here. And that's where you find rest. If you're always going somewhere, no matter where that is, going to some jhana place, going to enlightenment, going anywhere, that's stress. You never get enlightened that way. So all you do is just let things be. Be here, enjoy this moment. And then you find the mind gets very still and peaceful all by itself. When the mind gets peaceful all by itself, you have such happiness. And that's one of the reasons why I like to teach meditation, just to see crazy people become sane, tired people get energy, and sometimes some dull people, grumpy people, get this beautiful inner happiness. It's always there, just we don't know how to access it. We're always chasing it rather than stopping and letting it come to us. When people start getting happy, that is just so wonderful. And you see that with the smiles on people's faces. I always like quoting one of the great suttas, the Dhammacetya Sutra of the Majjhima Nikaya, where the king went to see the Buddha. And he said how much he liked coming into the Buddhist monastery. That was the Jetavana monastery, just outside of Sarvati in North India. I always liked coming into this monastery because the monks are always smiling and happy. And the Buddha said, yes, that's what you can expect, the monks to be smiling and happy when they are meditating correctly and they are starting to develop along the path. That's a sign that you can meditate. You're happy. So how can you be happy? By learning how to relax and be still. And this beautiful relaxed body, beautiful relaxed mind, without a care in the world. Do you ever remember times like that so far in your life? Maybe being on holiday somewhere, maybe even when you were a kid, or maybe your youth. You're in some time, some place, and you never wanted to be anywhere else in the whole world, just with the person you were with, in the place you were with. So content just being here. No place to go, no worries from the past, just totally happy to be here. I'm sure you've had places like that in your life, at least I hope you have. And you find those places where you've been totally content. You haven't had more money than you can ever spend. You haven't, you know, been with great people. You haven't been even in places which are just so good temperature. Sometimes you can be content anywhere. And sometimes the most content times in your life, what do you remember? It's just because you were happy to be there. It didn't need to be perfect. It was good enough. You let go of wanting to be anywhere else, and you were just so happy being right here. You should be able to achieve that in this place. It's a beautiful place. Just walking around the perimeter this morning, just see, even in the lake, the ducks are there now. You just sit by the lake in the afternoon. The afternoon is quite warm. Now in the mornings it's cold, but it soon warms up outside as the sun comes up. Sit by the lake, no need to meditate, just watch the ducks swim backwards and forwards. That will make you very peaceful. And then you can cross your legs and meditate. And again, you just go and watch the cockatoos, you know, in the forest. They're endangered species, white cockatoos and red cockatoos. But they have a sanctuary here. With so many beautiful things you can watch. And just be content to be here. So please don't try to get peaceful in meditation. Don't aim for jhanas. Don't try and become enlightened. That will just give you more stress. You relax and let enlightenment come to you. You're just happy to be here, and the peaceful meditations will just appear. As my teacher would always say, we meditate not to attain things. We meditate to let things go. You might even say to let things be, not to try and change things and get things. Then you find the secret of meditation, learning how to be at peace. How on earth can you be at peace when you're trying to get somewhere? How on earth can you rest when you're always traveling to some new destination, either outside or inside? You've done your traveling, getting to this place. You've arrived. I like that word, you've arrived. Because sometimes in life they say that to rich, famous people, they say, Usain Bolt, you got your gold medal, you've arrived. You're famous, you're Angelina Jolie, you've arrived. And now I say to each one of you, you've arrived. Arrived right here, right now, in this time, in this place. All your traveling is completed. All that struggling to make the schedules to get here is completed. All the worry about, you know, getting here late at night and finding your rooms, you've got your rooms now. You've arrived. Enjoy. Relax. Rest. Find peace inside of yourself. So for the goodness sake, please don't strive. Relax. And have that confidence in what I'm saying, because not many monks say that. They say, if you want to get enlightened, work hard. Sit down. Don't move. Many of you have been there and done that. That just creates more stress. You know, some of the retreats, because, you know, people tell me they go to other retreats, not just these ones. And they say, when you go to some of these other retreats, afterwards, people are so angry. I say, what on earth are they teaching you? They be quiet, wife. Don't disturb my meditation. What type of meditation are you doing? You get angry afterwards. But you come to these retreats, you're so peaceful and happy afterwards. Just like this one girl who came from Sydney. She came here, and when she went back, she sent me a letter after 9 days. She said when she went back to work on the Monday morning after this retreat, her boss looked at her and said, what drug were they giving you over here? I don't care what it was, next time you bring me back some. He'd never seen his secretary so happy. Now that is a sign that meditation is working. You're peaceful, happy and healthy. And then you understand what meditation is. As the Buddha always said, the only thing he ever teaches is suffering and the end of suffering. So that's my job, to end your suffering. At least end most of it. Some of it. And even a little bit of it. So end your body suffering so you can really relax. And end your mental suffering so no past, all the past vanishes. And all the future you're not worried about. And just be here. Isn't that a wonderful thing? At last. No one is going to give you any work to do. You got your job, little duties, you know, which Bianca's going to give you, but they're easy duties, just cutting up some vegetables and stuff like that. And anyway, you guys love cooking. It is true. I mean, we had a Singapore group here once. They could never get up in the morning for the morning chanting, but when they wanted to actually to cook some porridge in the morning, because all they got here was cornflakes and bread, they didn't like that at all. So they said, you know, can we make some porridge? We'll cook it. Okay. And when I would come in the morning, they were so happy. They could not get up for the morning meditation, but they could get up for the cooking and the conscience. It's true. So some of the chores you enjoy doing, it's just nice and easy, just a bit of cleaning here, a bit of what's in there. There's only a little bit of stuff to do. So please enjoy those chores. But no one is going to judge you. Now that's one of the worst things in my life was growing up, you're always being judged. Are you good enough at school? Are you good enough at sport? Are you a good enough boyfriend? Are you a good enough monk? And are you a good enough meditator? Are you a good enough Buddhist? You don't get that here. You are good enough. I won't judge you. You know, sometimes we have this tradition in Buddhism of people asking forgiveness. After they've been here a while, they come up and say, Ajahn Brahm, I've been here for a while now, can I ask forgiveness, anything which I've done wrong? You know, you did that to me in that hotel last time I was in Hong Kong. So Gerald will say, this is absolutely true, he said, look Gerald, I've given you forgiveness before. I always give forgiveness in the three time zones. I give you forgiveness for anything you've ever done in the past. I give you forgiveness for anything you're ever doing right now. And I give you forgiveness for anything we'll ever do in the future. To the coming of Maitreya Buddha, you're pre-forgiven. You can do whatever you like, knowing you're already forgiven. Isn't that wonderful? And that's not a joke, I actually mean that. So you're free. You're not going to be judged. Not going to be criticized. Total trust. You don't have to live up to anyone's expectations. Free at last. Now if you can actually do that, you'll get enlightened really quickly. But if you think, I've got to get this, I've got to achieve that, and you feel down when you fail, that is when you get stressed. That's when you're far, far, far away from any peace of mind. So please, just be in this moment. Don't judge yourself. Don't judge your meditation. Just be here. And you'll find your meditation retreat will evolve so naturally and so free and so peacefully. You'll be able to enjoy the beautiful surrounds of this place. Be able to enjoy the company of very good people. And you're very fortunate you've got monks and nuns here at the retreat as well. So you've not just got one Buddha statue, you've got lots of Buddha statues all around you. And isn't that wonderful, inspiring? And you can be very peaceful and get into the meditation. So, I think that's enough for this morning. Is there any questions or comments about what you should be doing? Oh, first of all, is there anyone who's never meditated before in their life? Put your hands up. Anyone? Other than me? Okay, so you all know a little bit about meditation. So, you know, if this afternoon, if you're not resting, you're not sleeping, you're not eating, you know, you're not in your room getting things ready, do a little bit of meditation. Come and sit here. You can sit in the chairs. You can sit on the cushions. If you want some more cushions, build them up. There's many other cushions around the place. You can borrow one from here, borrow one from there. You can see the walking meditation rooms. I'm not sure if you've seen them yet. Inside these rooms here, three rooms. You can do some walking meditation. And that was very nice. I remember over in Indonesia talking to you. One of the great ways of doing walking meditation. Now, if you're really tired and you're dull, you know, you have to say a mantra together with the walking. And in Indonesian, when you move your left foot, mati, right foot, pasti. Mati, pasti. Is that right? Yeah. death for sure. Death for sure. If you're from Hong Kong, speak English. As you move your left foot, I will die. Right foot, that's for sure. I will die. That's for sure. It certainly stops you going to sleep. I will die, that's for sure. I will die, that's for sure. Because it's a great thing. People actually do that. I will die, that's for sure. I will die, that's for sure. Yeah, of course you know that's a truth. That's going to happen. So it starts off being funny. And then it starts to get serious. And then it's like you get afraid. You really, because you're saying it to yourself again and again and again. You walk to the end, walk back again. Left foot, I will die. Right foot, that's for sure. I will die, that's for sure. It really gets into you. And you get to this real fear stuff. But carry on. Because once you get past that fear, the attachments disappear. I will die, that's for sure. What am I worried about? I'm going to die. I'm going to be free. No worries at all. No worries about money. No worries about relationships. No worries about anything. Totally free. I will die, that's for sure. Brilliant. Bring it on. It's a great way of letting go of all fear and attachment. So if you get a bit bored, you can try I will die, that's for sure, when you do walking meditation. See what happens. But I guarantee you won't die, not in the next few days anyway. Because as Bianca will probably tell you later on, that's against the rules. There's many rules here, and one of the rules is you're not allowed to die on the retreat. Afterwards, fine, but please don't do it when you're on a retreat. It's agreed? No one has ever died yet on a retreat, and I don't expect them to happen now. In fact, because you get very peaceful and relaxed, you get much healthier. Wonderful to see people when they do meditation retreats, how healthy they become. Okay, the story about good health, just the last little story, which is always, I get inspired telling these stories because these are true stories which actually happened. I see them with my own eyes and it just makes me feel so happy. This poor guy came on one of these retreats. Do you remember him, Bianca? He came with a face mask. He had this terrible eczema that was over in North Perth. Don't remember him? Okay, it was in North Perth when we did the retreats over in Vincent Street, the Redemptorist Monastery. He came and he said straight away that he didn't know whether he could last the whole 9 days. So he had this eczema all over his body, this rash, this psoriasis. And he looked a real mess. His whole face, you know, had pustules. And he opened his shirt up and you could see it on his body. He lifted up his trousers. He said, every inch of my body. He said, it's just torture. And he wore this rubber face mask to stop him actually scratching his skin off his face. And he said, doctors can't help me, psychiatrists can't help me, psychologists. I'm just last throw of the dice, see if meditation helps. And he said, if I walk out, it's nothing to do with your teachings, it just can't stand it. And he stayed the whole 9 days, and he came to see me at the very end. He never actually came to any interviews, he just came at the very end. And he lifted up his trousers. It had all gone. Opened up his shirt, his face was clear. And it's actually not totally gone. He had this 2-inch band over his ankles. He said, that's nothing. Absolutely nothing. Yeah, that would really upset a lot of people. But for me, look, my skin is clear. It's gone. Thank you so much. And that was really sort of really got right inside of me, remembering that. You know, someone who's really tortured by this terrible stress-related eczema all over his body. And in 9 days, he was free of it, basically. So that's what this meditation can do to your health. Take a person who's really, really suffering and it just bring them to a state of health and peace and happiness. So I don't know what your sicknesses are. We've all got some sickness somewhere. It's not in the body, it's in the head. You're going to get rid of all of that. You're going to be free and healthy and peaceful if you follow the instructions. And that's my joy. That's the gift you give to me. And to Bianca and everyone else who works, and the caretakers, everyone else who works in here. You'll be happy and healthy and peaceful. And that's really all the reward we want. Any questions, comments, complaints? Okay. So now there is 2 hours before lunch. Just enough time. Have you got alarm clocks? I'm sure you wake up for 11 o'clock for lunch. Doesn't matter how tired you are, how late you came in last night, I'm sure you'll still wake up for lunchtime. So have a nice day. I'll be around this afternoon if anybody wants any advice or whatever. But it's basically free and easy this afternoon. And this evening, what's the next thing that happens at 7? What time we do this? No, 10 to 8 we do chanting at 10 to 8. And then 8 o'clock we do a little bit of question and answers.
Can you please announce after this?
After this.